By now, I think pretty much all of us have heard of peak oil, the idea that global petroleum suppliers are about to, or have, passed their maximum level of supply and are now in decline. But have you ever heard of peak phosphorus? It's going to be something you'll hear more about in the next years to come, because when the Earth's phosphorus supplies run out, so too will food. In fact, my first guest today believes deposits of phosphorus could be depleted as early as this century. It sounds a little like a doomsday scenario, but there is a glimmer of hope if we can reclaim phosphorus from human waste. Let's find out more, because with me today is Dana Cordell, who's an Australian PhD scholar studying this very issue, and she joins me now on the line from Sweden. And Dana, you are living through the land of the midnight sun at the moment, eh?
Yes, indeed. This week is actually midsummer, so we don't have much darkness at the moment.
And yet what we're talking about here is pretty gloomy, I have to say. Tell us how it is that you find yourself researching phosphorus deposits globally in a place like Sweden.
Well, I actually came to Sweden a few years ago to study water security and was looking at water scarcity in the context of global food production. And at the same time, I was researching sustainable sanitation systems that reuse nutrients from human excreta, like phosphorus. And so then I started to make the comparisons with water and seeing, in the same way that water is becoming scarce globally, so too will phosphorus.
So you then went a stage further and started looking at existing supplies of phosphorus and then, I guess, matching that against demand, did you?
Exactly, but there's very little data available, which is quite concerning, I think, in itself, given that phosphorus is so important for food production globally.
Well, you better explain to us why it is that it's such a basic building block for food production. Why is it we need phosphorus?
Okay, well, all modern agriculture is dependent on annual inputs of phosphate rock as fertiliser, but historically we didn't need mineral fertilisers from phosphate rock. We just used the phosphorus that's naturally in the soil or added organic sources like manure or even human excreta. China has been doing that for probably the last 5,000 years. But phosphorus is essential for all living matter, whether it's plants, bacteria, humans. It's essential for all living cells, basically. So we have to get it from somewhere. It's along with nitrogen and potassium. It's one of those essential ingredients. And we get our phosphorus from the food that we eat.
How reliant is Australian agriculture on phosphorus?
I'd say very reliant, because we've invested quite heavily in export commodities that rely a lot on phosphorus, like wheat and beef, for example. So we're also relying a lot on imports increasingly to support our industry.
And when it comes to agricultural production, our soil quality comes off a pretty low base, doesn't it?
Yes, by world standards, we naturally have very low phosphorus content in our soils, and so does Africa, for example, which is quite different to, say, the Northern European or American soils.
So you were saying earlier that the amount of data and information regarding phosphorus supplies globally is fairly scarce, and yet obviously you're adding to it now because of your research. Just give us again, if you wouldn't mind, what I mentioned as being almost like a doomsday scenario. What is it you're predicting in terms of global supplies of phosphorus and when things could get scarce?
Okay, well, what we're seeing is, from the data that is available, that global phosphate rock reserves might be depleted in the next 50 to 100 years. But what's more concerning than that is what you mentioned in relation to peak phosphorus, which from our analysis shows could happen in the next 30 years. And while that does still seem it's a few decades away, what is of concern is that there are no alternatives on the market today that could possibly replace phosphate rock in any significant way.
So like peak oil, when you talk about peak phosphorus being maybe on an arc of 30 years before it hits that peak, after that peak we start diminishing maybe not only in supplies but accessibility of existing supplies, which means price goes up, doesn't it?
Exactly, and we're already seeing that. The price of phosphate rock has gone up 700% just in the last 15 months alone. And industry doesn't deny that the quality of phosphate rock globally is going down and the cost will increase. And it's also linked to the price of oil and energy in general, because mining and particularly transporting phosphate rock around the world is quite energy intensive, and at the moment it relies on cheap fossil fuel energy.
We're speaking to Dana Cordell, who's a PhD student from Australia but based in Sweden, about what we're calling peak phosphorus and whether our demand, our global demand for phosphorus, will exceed supply in the next century or so. Listening into this conversation as well is the Executive Manager of the Fertiliser Industry Federation of Australia, Nick Drew. And Nick, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello.
Good to have you with us. Nick, I must say, as a layperson listening from outside the industry, this sends alarm bells ringing for me. Does it do that for you?
Well, yes and no. The story about finite resources is certainly true, and I guess the question comes down to the timescale and the alternatives. Dana presents some pretty interesting view on that, and we're looking forward to having her come to speak to us sometime later this year, having had a preliminary conversation a little while ago. But some of the estimates that I've seen from within the industry would suggest that the phosphate reserves that we know about at the moment, we're probably somewhere between 100 and 250 years of available supplies. But I guess it's just a question of timing, and eventually it's a finite resource, and we have to work out how to better reuse phosphate that goes off in crops and animals if we're going to have a sustainable system over the very long term.
Well, I'd like to talk, if I may, to both you and Dana about the recycling potential, and Dana's already mentioned what's been happening in China for the last 5,000 years when it comes to human waste. But let's, if we may, just I just want to clarify this in terms of timelines here. Is there perhaps, like petrol and some of the arguments about other non-renewables that might be reaching a finite point, that we still don't know yet whether we've discovered all that can be discovered when it comes to phosphorus? Nick?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the case, and I think Dana makes the point that the data's pretty scarce. And it's interesting that with the recent sort of step change in phosphate prices, we've seen a huge amount of interest in exploration and a number of deposits in Australia, which have been known about but have been uneconomic, are now getting serious attention in sort of pre-feasibility studies. And some of those are almost certain to be commercialised on the basis that phosphate prices are now going to stay quite a bit higher than they have been for a long time. So I think it's a bit like, you know, the first predictions of peak oil, I think, had it around 1960-something, and was subsequently revised as prices change. The dynamics of finding and exploiting reserves changes as well. So, but regardless of that, the eventual story is exactly as Dana paints it, that phosphorus is non-negotiable as far as growing plants or animals. It's a fundamental building block of everything, and it is to some extent a finite resource, except that it's never destroyed. It just goes somewhere else. So,
are you saying that in breaking it down and it perhaps passing safe through us as human waste, that we don't lose something in that part of the process?
No, phosphorus is an element, so we don't ever actually lose it. It just changes forms. So obviously some attention on recovery is going to be a good thing.
Yes, okay. Well, Dana, let's come back to you on that, because what are you suggesting we should be looking at in terms of recovery techniques for phosphorus that we're not addressing at the moment?
Well, I think there's no single silver bullet that can solve this problem in the future, but what we need to do is look at the entire system, from mining phosphate rock to application on the fields to harvest and use in food commodities and then final consumption, and see where all the wastages are or the potential points for recovery. Because as Nick pointed out, unlike oil, which is destroyed when it's used, phosphorus is not, so we can recover it. And one thing we can look at is human excreta indeed, which alone cannot solve the problem, but it's one thing that we haven't been looking at or paying much attention to, well, at least outside of Sweden, because every year we produce 3 million tonnes of phosphorus in our human excreta globally.
3 million tonnes?
3 million tonnes of elemental phosphorus. And this will essentially go out, lost to waterways, where it can potentially cause algal blooms or put in landfill or whatnot, if it's not purposefully recycled back to agriculture.
And how difficult is it to extract the phosphorus from human waste?
It's not particularly hard, because, for example, what's happening in Sweden is the use of urine-diverting toilets. So what that means is actually at the toilet, you separate the urine and the faeces straight away, and the urine might get stored in a tank under the house, although there's different configurations. And most people don't know that urine is essentially sterile, so you can actually use it directly, perhaps after waiting 6 months of storage, and then a farmer can use that directly as a liquid fertiliser application.
And how much phosphorus in urine is there compared to, say, faeces?
There's a lot more in urine. There's about 60% of the phosphorus, or 50 to 60% is in the urine. And actually, if we start looking at cities and thinking globally, because most people are living in cities these days, cities are becoming phosphorus hotspots because urine is the largest single source of phosphorus that's coming out of cities. So that's in a highly dense environment, so we could potentially think about capturing that stream in the future and using it for local food production or regional food production.
Which, of course, ties in very nicely indeed, if we can find a way to do this, and it sounds like Sweden has already, of saving water at the same time, because we are trying desperately to save water in such parts of our plumbing systems as lavatories, so that makes sense to me.
Exactly, and also in relation to waterless urinals, which could be huge water savers for cities as well. If we could capture the urine from waterless urinals, that could be an opportunity to trial in Australia.
Nick Drew, has your industry come to grips with some of the techniques and technologies that Dana's just outlined for us there?
Not at all. And we're looking forward to have Dana come and sort of open our eyes, because I think this is a new area. But just a little bit of perspective, Dana talks about 3 million tonnes globally of elemental phosphorus, and currently we use in Australia annually about 500,000 tonnes of elemental phosphorus in agriculture. So it's going to be a contributor, but not the answer.
Okay. All right, so we've talked there about the idea of perhaps processing and recycling human waste, and particularly urine, as a way of reclaiming phosphorus back. Nick Drew, where are some of the other elements of phosphorus use and abuse, perhaps, that we need to redress?
Well, I think there are some avenues for improving the efficiency of use, so that when we apply it, there's less that ends up in inaccessible forms in the soil, because it's one of the things that happens to phosphorus in application is that it can get tied up with metals, for example, which form insoluble phosphate compounds, which are then just sitting there in the soil unavailable to the plant. So that's probably one of the areas where there's some potential.
Dana, do you have any other thoughts on where we could be obtaining phosphorus from that we haven't been using up until now?
In Australia, yes. I mean, I agree with Nick, that's the situation, that only about 2% of the phosphorus we're applying in agriculture ends up in the food that we're eating, and hence in our human excreta, because pretty much what goes in our bodies comes out the other end. So Nick's pointed to a very important area or source that we really need to address. And because a lot of the food that we do produce is exported off our shores, we can't actually recover that in Australia. But another place is thinking about the food commodity chain. What happens when food is produced and retailers and then householders are managing and using food? There's perhaps 50% wastage that occurs in that sort of food commodity chain. So we can start thinking about reducing wastage in supermarket dumpsters and household bins, or also collecting that food waste and composting that for reuse.
Look, it sounds to me like it's something we need to address now, because otherwise, thinking and change being what it is in this world, we're going to be left behind on this. Do you see it, Dana, as an important global issue in terms of food supplies and production as water and climate change?
Indeed. I mean, while we're seeing the impacts or the potential impacts of climate change and water right now, if we don't address the phosphorus problem as well, we will be in huge trouble later on. So I think it's absolutely essential, because phosphorus is as essential as water is for food production, and you can't replace phosphorus in food production. So yes, I do believe it's important that we do start to address it now, and particularly because we don't have the data, as Nick also suggested. We need to really start collecting the data and understanding what's really going on.
Just remind us, if you wouldn't mind, Nick Drew, where do we source our phosphorus from in Australia now?
We get our phosphorus from mostly from North America and from North Africa, with some coming in now also from China.
And that's a guaranteed supply?
I'm not sure what you mean by guaranteed.
Well, is it consistently reliable? Prices may fluctuate, but we can always guarantee that it will arrive on our shores.
Yeah, that's been the case to date, and I think, you know, within the sort of 30 or 40 year time frame, we're confident of our supplies. I guess the question in the longer term is what happens, but I'd be in terms of what we're doing at the moment, I'm reasonably optimistic that there'll be some significant increase in that identified resource, and that we've got probably a bit more time than 50 or 60 years to think a bit harder about how we deal with the issue of reuse and better use of the phosphorus that we apply.
Dana Cordell, do you believe Nick Drew is giving the industry too much of a timeline here?
I guess it is hard to say with the time, but because we don't know exactly when this is going to happen, it is important, of course, to start thinking about it now. And, of course, because the global phosphorus reserves that do exist are in the control of only a few countries in the world, it is pretty important that we start thinking of alternative ways of accessing phosphorus in case problems do arise in the future.
Well, thank you both for making all of us, I think a little harder about this. Until this story arose, I had no idea that this is an issue that we needed to even contend with. And I'll just add it to what's becoming a growing palette of concerns. And I do thank you both very much indeed.
You're welcome.
Dana Cordell, an Australian PhD scholar studying phosphorus use and recycling. She was on the line there from Sweden. And also joining us today, Nick Drew, Executive Manager from the Fertiliser Industry Federation of Australia.